Their sufferings at Polock and Spas. After 2 years, the sisters were ordered off to Polock to assist in building a palace for Shemezko. They were tied two and two as before, and had to walk in chains. But this was not their greatest trial. Their dear crucifix was taken from them. On arriving at Polock, they were placed in a convent, which, like their late prison, also had once belonged to their own order, but was now occupied by black nuns and Russian popes. They were put under the power of the proto-pope, Juan Wicroquin, a drunken fellow, who always carried about him with a knotted thong, with which he struck the poor sisters whenever he met them. The black nuns were much more numerous here than at Witobisk, so that their prisoners had each 10 tyrants instead of one. Here, too, as at Witobisk, some of the old Catholic sisterhood were kept in confinement. There had been 25, but when Mother Macrina arrived, 15 had perished in the persecution, and she found only 10 sisters and 1 corpse. 2 of these had lost their reason from blows on the head, yet they were compelled to labor with the others. One of them died soon after the arrival of the nuns of Minsk, the other 6 months afterwards. She was found a bloody corpse in her cell, and no doubt she had died under the blows of her executioner. The sisters were not suffered to remain long at Polock, because the townspeople used to throw them bread over the wall. So they were moved to Spas, and were made to carry all the furniture of the convent to their new abode. Then they were set to level the ground for Shemezko's palace. Being new to the work, constant accidents happened, which cost the lives of many of the sisters. 5 of them were buried alive by earth falling upon them as they were making an excavation. The danger was known beforehand, but no precautions were taken. And when the horrible catastrophe occurred, the witnesses of it were not allowed to do anything for the deliverance of the sufferers. And there, perhaps, they would have remained to this day, but that some brave inhabitants of Polock came by night, and having dug them out, gave them burial, and the bodies of the martyrs rest in peace. Their most painful task was breaking stones, for they had no hammers, and were obliged to break one stone against another. The labor was so great that their arms were frequently put out of joint, but they were not, on the account, relieved from the necessity of breaking the required amount, and the sisters had to replace the bones in their sockets for each other. Whatever inflammation ensued, they had still to go on with their work, and they were soon covered with ulcers and tumors that broke out all over their bodies. Their clothes, one scanty petticoat was all they had, were soaked in blood, and faint from want of food, racked with pain, and ready to drop with fatigue. They passed the hours of labor, expecting every moment to die. Then, when night came, they could not sleep. In no position could they find rest, so covered were they with painful wounds, and they were fain to lie in each other's arms and rest aching heads on no less aching bosoms. But that God gave them strength to endure that cross, they must have all sunk beneath its weight. As it were, 3 of them died in 8 days. One was crushed to death by stones which she had not the strength to draw to their appointed place. Obliged to let go of the rope, the bucket fell, and the poor laborer was killed. The other 2 sank from exhaustion. The nuns were generally not allowed to help each other. Only Mother Macrina might exchange work with any sister who was exhausted. In this way she saved her life on one occasion, when 9 sisters were killed by the falling of a wall. She was on a high scaffolding, when one of them, who was wheeling a barrel below, cried out, "Mother, I can do no more." She accordingly came down, and the other went up to take her place. Almost immediately afterward came a great crash and a piercing cry. On looking round, Mother Macrina saw nothing but a cloud of dust. But when the dust had cleared away, she saw that the wall had fallen down, and that her 9 sisters had disappeared under the ruins. She fainted at the sight, but they scourged her until she recovered, and then drove her to work again. This misfortune put a stop to the work for some time, and the surviving sisters were employed in breaking stones, carrying wood, and digging. But after a few weeks the building recommenced, as Shemezko was expected. He had been again informed that the sisters were at length ready to recant. He hastened thither to receive their recantation. Meanwhile, they lost two more sisters from scourging. Some indignant persons had scratched on the walls of the Russian church the following droggle rhyme. Here, instead of monasteries, are Serbia and the galleys. And the poor nuns of Minsk were accused of it. They were all flogged, and with such barbarity that two of them died. When Shemesko arrived, Mother Makrina asked him who had sent for him to tempt them again. "You yourself," said he. "I?" said the mother indignantly. "Yes, you, or some of your sisters." The nuns burst out into a cry of horror. "Apostate," said the heroic woman. "Traitor to Jesus Christ and his church, by God's help, we will die for the faith as our sisters have died." At these words, Shemesko struck her on the cheek, upon which she turned to him the other. Indeed, this seems to have been a favorite pastime of his, for in different visits he knocked out 9 of her teeth. He then took from his pocket the emperor's ukase, of which we have already spoken, and made her read it aloud. It approved as holy, holy, and thrice holy, all that the Archbishop Shemesko had done or might do for the promotion of the Orthodox Greek religion, and commanded all persons, including the military, to assist him. After she read it, he took from his pocket a petition which Mother Makrina had written to the emperor, renouncing all their temporal possessions, provided they might die quietly in their own faith, and showing it to her, struck her such a blow on the face as to break the cartilage of her nose. "I'll teach you to write to the emperor," said he. Then he struck her again, and taking her by the shoulders and shaking her, he threw her down and stamped upon her. At last he inquired who had written that petition. "I," said the mother. "All of us," said the sisters. "Who gave you the paper?" "We got it from some poor persons." "And who wrote it?" "We did it ourselves." His rage at this past expression. "When I have taken off 3 skins, one that you had from God, and the other 2 from the emperor, you will tell me the truth." The sisters were all scourged. The lashes fell without being counted, and still he stood by and asked, "Who gave you the paper? Who wrote the petition?" But he could find out nothing more, and at length they desisted. One of the sisters died that night, like so many others, on the mother's knees, and the next day they were driven to labor as usual. From that time forward the poor were not allowed to come near them, and, but for the Jews who gave them brandy grains, they must have perished with hunger. They could not exclude the Jews, because they owed them money for brandy. Shemesko came again the next morning, and with curses urged them to apostatize, and insisted upon knowing who had helped them with their petition. Not succeeding in obtaining the desired information, he went away, enjoining Fedor to torment them more and more, and this winter, 1841-1842, their sufferings were greater than ever. Next spring the floggings twice a week were resumed, and they received 50 lashes each time. Sister Seraphine, who was 72 years of age, died under the infliction. At the 30th lash the name of Jesus was no more heard. Her soul was already in heaven. 20 yet remained to complete the sentence, and they were given to the corpse. 2 other sisters also died, 1 2 hours afterwards, and the other not till midnight. "O my Jesus," said Sister Natalie, "come and console me, for I love you with all my heart." And so saying, she expired. After the 6th scourging, the Russian general, moved by the entreaties of his wife, interfered. They went to the house just as the flogging was about to commence. When his wife saw all the preparations, she swooned away, and the general told the protopope that if he obeyed the orders of the apostate bishop, he would have him hanged, for the emperor could not be aware of their horrible cruelty. He had them taken back to prison and sent them 10 rubles in order that they might be enabled to procure themselves some food. They, however, did not enjoy the benefit of this charity, for the protopope appropriated the whole of it. Nor were they much the better for his interference, for although the floggings were discontinued, Shemesko was so enraged with the general that he advised yet worse torments than any that had gone before. One evening the sisters were brought home from their work earlier than usual, and the deacons, the popes, and a number of savage men, mad with drink and every evil passion, were turned in upon those defenseless women, with full license to work their will with them. God preserved them through that fearful night. He alone knows how. But the morning dawned on a bloody heap of dead, or mutilated, though still bleeding bodies. Two of the sisters were no more. One lay crushed with the iron hoof of one of those wild beasts. The other was one mass of wounds, so that the fatal blow could not be distinguished. Eight sisters, though alive, had had their eyes forced out and their faces torn. One had their nose bitten off. All were horribly bruised and bitten, and gashed and trampled on, and the floor of the prison was slippery with their blood. Mother Macrina was stabbed in the side in three places and in the arm, besides a gash on the head. Yet, when she asked to be allowed, wounded as she herself was, to dress the wounds of her children, they bore her away from the cell because she would not purchase the boon by deserting her faith. When Fedor came to remove the dead bodies, his only remark to the nuns was, "See how God punishes you." This outrage did not pass without comment either from God or man. That night, nine cattle belonging to the black nuns died in the field, and their four horses were found dead in the stables the next morning. It was a judgment from God in token of his displeasure, and even under Russian tyranny the populace was roused. The excitement gathered strength, though the authorities adopted every possible expedient to arrest it. One gentleman was taken in his own house, and without a trial sent to Serbia, for having had a requiem said for the dead nuns, and a convent of Dominicans, which had long been recognized in the country, was broken up and dispersed at a moment's warning for saying prayers for the martyred sisters. But Polak was not intimidated, and Shimesko thought it safe to change the scene of his operations. There was another house of black nuns at Medozoli, and thither the sisters were dispatched. First, however, they received a visit from a Franciscan father named Filocci, who had sold himself to the schism and become the bosom friend of Shimesko. The nuns did not know this, and when they saw a Catholic priest, their hearts leaped with joy, in the hope of confession and communion. They remarked it as somewhat strange that he only gave them alms and no spiritual consolation. But he seemed ashamed of his apostasy, and it was not till his second visit that he ventured to recommend their giving up their faith, when he employed the following notable argument. If union and orthodoxy be one and the same thing, then what more holy than Shimesko's desire that under the same monarch there should be but one religion? The sisters were stupefied, and the mother asked, "Who sent you?" "I am sent by God," he said, "to save your souls, which you have steeped in hell by your obstinacy." "Ah," retorted the Holy Mother, "if our souls are in hell, then your own place, Judas, is in heaven." At these words, he was going to strike her, when one of the sisters seized him by the shoulders and, with the help of the others, turned him out of the door. His rage against them was extreme, and some time afterwards, before they left Polak, he found means to gratify it. At his instigation, Shimesko had them shut up for 6 days and fed on salt herrings, without a drop of water or atom of food. The raging thirst they at first endured exceeded description. The 2 first days the agony was insupportable. A burning fire devoured their inside, and the skin of their tongue and palate peeled off with fever. But still, the passion of Jesus sustained them. They thought of his thirst upon the cross. They thought also of the thirst of the souls in purgatory, and they fell on their faces, offering to God their sufferings in their behalf. God had pity upon them. For that moment they felt neither thirst nor hunger, and on the 7th morning, when they were taking to their labors, they made a vow to abstain from water for that day also, in honor of the 7 sorrows of Mary. When Ivan saw that they were not yet conquered, he said, "You must have a devil within you who suffers in your stead."